Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another show where once again I'm joined by Teddy McAllister, and also a very warm welcome back to the show to the Liverpool Echo, Sam Carroll. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, you know, cracking on. I'm starting to miss the missing the footy, I think I'm missing playing more than actually supporting Everton, because it is what it is, isn't it? But
well, yeah,
we're hopefully at the back end of this now, and hopefully we can get back into it soon.
Fingers crossed. I mean, they're pushing for June, which is only, you know, 2 weeks away now, so it's not long to go if that's the case. Obviously, the Bundesliga is back. Have you been watching any of that?
I had the first games on last weekend, but I think I was working the weekend after, which was, I don't know, it just felt like watching. I think because we played Mainz in pre-season, I've kind of got that in my head, like just seeing that like empty stadium. Like, it just feels like you're just kind of watching a kickabout between teams, doesn't it? It's quite surreal when you realise there's points and stuff at stake. So, yeah, hopefully be able to watch the... is it Dortmund-Bayern tomorrow night?
It is indeed, yeah. That's obviously the one everyone's talking about.
But yeah, the lad I live with, Adam, he's a big Dortmund fan. I don't know how he's ended up getting into that. So I'm sure he'll be well in tune to that on tomorrow night.
Well, I've been a faux Schalke fan since the lockdown was lifted in Germany, so at least he's having a better time than I am. Honestly, it's unbelievable. I mean, you suffer enough watching Everton and then all this comes along. It's quite the experience, but then I never seem to take the easy way, so why not? Teddy, what about yourself? How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. I've been watching Bundesliga like yourselves, and you were saying, you know, supporting Schalke, it's like supporting Everton. I can't. One Everton's enough for me. If I'm watching another league, another sport, another anything, I'm supporting the easiest team to support. So if I'm supporting anyone, it's Bayern Munich. If I'm watching Italy, it's Juventus. I don't care. I'm doing my bit with Everton. One thing I took from the behind closed doors games is it kills off your sort of attention for neutral game, well, games that aren't your team, I should say. While there's points on it and title races and relegation and whatnot, because the spectacle's so different, it's not as entertaining, not as gripping. Whereas I think it's going to be a lot different when you support one of the teams, especially when we come back. We're going straight into a Merseyside derby, so... yeah, it'll be strange with empty seats and what have you, but you know, when you really, really care, you're kicking every ball with them again, it's gonna be something else entirely. It won't be as good as it will be with supporters, obviously, but it won't be as dry as some of the Bundesliga games
are. It's like a pre-season vibe. I think, like Sam said before, it is a pre-season vibe that I get off watching those games at the moment.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I watched Mainz versus Leipzig yesterday. And, it, you know, goals galore. It was, you know, it was nice to see an entertaining game. But I think if I was watching a 0-0 type game with no supporters, it'd be quite difficult to watch, you know, to hold your attention. But when the Merseyside derby's on, I'll be sitting there, like, on the edge of my seat like everyone else.
Yeah, well, I think that's a whole different kettle of fish altogether. I mean, any Premier League game's, like, hectic enough. But I think going straight back into a derby, I really going to have to... you know, really try and get myself mentally prepared for that, because it's a tough one.
Well, it's baby steps at the minute, isn't it? I mean, they're going to vote this week on, you know, this next phase of training and what have you. And yeah, I think any prospect of it not coming back's gone out the window now, since you know, the testing's gone well, the Bundesliga's gone well so far. You can never say never, but I think they sort of can see a pathway now to getting it back. And then we'll just, you know, go from there. And then, you know, no gentle, like, you know, restart for us. We're thrown into one of the most dreaded games of the year straight away.
I mean, to be fair, it'd be the most Everton thing ever if we actually win that game when there's no fans to enjoy it. Like, it's probably about as typical Everton as it could get. If we're ever going to win a derby, it'll probably be that one.
Well, I may have agreed if it was at Anfield, but I think we're at the biggest disadvantage because we're missing our home crowds. If this was the Anfield derby, I'd sort of look into the lack of crowds as possibly something that might change the dynamic. But, well, it still will change the dynamic, but maybe not in the way we want, but fingers crossed.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. But obviously tonight we're going to be just run through what's going on tonight. We're going to be doing a segment on the Everton Academy and what we've got to look forward to on that front in the near future. Then we've got the middle bit where we're going to have a little random off-topic discussion on comedy films. Then we've got the next two of our series of player performance reviews for the current season so far. And then finally, we'll finish off with the classic quiz. Our main segments will be separate on YouTube, so we'll introduce them separately as we move through the podcast. So we'll start with our Academy Under-23s segment, where we are going to be looking deeper into what the future holds for the Under-23s and below. And we'll start with you, Sam. We were made aware recently that a plethora of the Under-23 title-winning squad are going to be released at the end of the season. Obviously, it's a bit of a disappointment as there was high hopes for some of these lads, but you know, Morgan Feeney's probably the major surprise in all this. Are you surprised there's so many of the title-winning Under-23s team has been released?
Not so much of a surprise. I think, obviously, Feeney would be the one. If you remember last season when Harry Charsley picked up a pretty bad injury and Everton gave him an extra 6 months to kind of get himself back fit in the new season. You know, and there was, I think, at that time, people kind of questioned why that was. And I remember speaking to David Unsworth about it, and he said, you know, because it was the right thing to do. So, you know, I kind of leaned towards the fact that he probably would do something similar with Morgan. You know, how much more bad luck can you get? You know, his first ever loan away from Everton, and he ends up getting injured in his first game for Tranmere, you know, and then Tranmere ends up flying as well. You know, just such bad luck for a lad who just doesn't deserve it, you know what I mean? A lower lad of season, ticket holder, been with the club since a kid, worked his way up through the age groups, won two, you know, been integral to two Premier League two titles. He captained them to the double last season. So I'd say there's an element of surprise about Morgan and an element maybe of disappointment with how that one has been handled by the club. Obviously, Everton have told him he can go in and train with the lads during pre-season, but it's difficult, isn't it? Whether you'd want to... Is that something that Morgan would want to do, to go in and train with lads who, you know, at the end they've got a contract while he's out there searching for the club in a difficult environment? So, you know, I wouldn't think we... I don't know. I think it makes me a little bit sad of how Morgan's probably been treated in that situation.
I know. I'm certainly disappointed on Morgan's behalf. I had very high hopes for him. And also, is there a possibility, do you think, maybe that if he is training without a contract, there's a view to maybe offering him a new contract if he trains well? Or maybe is that out the window?
Case, I think it was something similar with Harry Charsley, wasn't it? That they wanted to kind of give him that opportunity. And at the same time, it worked out well for Unsworth and John Eberle and Franny Jeffords because they were short on numbers last season at one point, and Harry Charles, you know, can play in a lot of positions, and Morgan was obviously, if it came to it, then it wouldn't massively surprise me. You know, I think a lot of people had high hopes for Morgan. You know, made his debut under David Unsworth in the first team, and he is a proper classic centre half, an Everton centre half almost. But at the same time, you know, something that I've kind of thought about for the last 18 months or 2 years is that we also need to stop kind of, we can't keep giving lads contract upon contract upon contract just in case, you know, the start to blossom when they're 23, 24, because we're starting to, I think, have a detrimental effect on people's careers. You know, there's always going to be a couple, like an Everton example point, Michael Keane, isn't it? Manchester United let him go, and then a few years later, he's getting signed by a rival for 30 million, which, you know, these stories are few and far between, really. And, you know, we've got, you know, your Tyus Brownings, your Matthew Penningtons, your Luke Garbutt, and even now we're starting to have, like, your Keaton Dials are approaching it, of lads in the mid-20s who are still just, you know, essentially being stockpiled for Everton and playing under-23 football. And, you know, I think I said it last time, I think, you know, under-23 football to an extent is still, you know, good for players in the early stages of the careers. But certainly what this now looks to be doing is getting players like, you know, your Tyler Onyangos, Lewis Warrington, Ryan Astley, Lewis Dobbin. I think these changes of releasing your Denny's and your Manas Manpala and people like that, it's about getting the younger lads more exposure, and then maybe getting them into the loan system earlier, which is something that we haven't been doing, and it's definitely been difficult for some of those younger lads, because, you know, even on a human level, you look at Keegan Dowell's been at Forest and then Derby and then Wigan, you know, Pennington, Leeds, Ipswich, Hull. You know, it's lads getting moved around the country each year and not being given a chance to settle and, you know, make a good go of the career somewhere and try and make the way back to the Premier League, like a John Lundstrom and a Shane Duffy and people like that. So, you know, if Everton are convinced that these lads aren't good enough for the first team at whatever point, I think the decision has to be made to let them move on. And I think that's a positive. I think from the lads getting released, go and give them that opportunity. And, you know, as I've said there, I think Morgan is the only one where you think maybe should have been given, you know, at least 6 months when you consider what's happened to him at the back end of the season.
Certainly, I think Morgan Feeney's probably the one that's the big surprise for me, but the others, I think it's probably the right move. I think, like you say, we've been holding on to players far too long. I think it's mad to think that Luke Garbutt's still on our books and he's older than Luca Dean. I think that's always the one that I seem to bring up. Terry, what do you think on the situation with the academy and the under-23s?
I mean, it looks like it's either the beginning of or the next phase of a strategy that Marcel Brands has put in place since he's come into the club. Now, I just want to ask Sam, really, like, now he's clearly clearing the decks of sorts, isn't he, of a lot of players who have, you know, they've made decisions on in the under-23s, you know, they don't see having a future going forward. Now, from your understanding, what do you think that would indicate, well, they've got an influx of new players they might have been lining up to come in and take those spots, or do you think they'll have a cluster of under-18 players who they see are stepping up into those positions, or a mix of both? Or, like, what do you think will be the next step once those players are out the door? Who comes into those places in the under-23 team?
I think it's definitely going to be the under-18 lads. Do you know, I don't think it's going to be a complete, you know, it's not like we're starting next season with zero, you know, or completely rebuilding. You know, you've got to think towards the back end of last season, you know, Jared Branthwaite came in from Carlisle, so you'd expect him to get at least the first half of the season before they'd look on a loan or potentially stepping him up to in and around first team training. Kyle John was playing a fullback and I think had even had some interest from the Football League in terms of loans for him and the kind of breakthrough he'd made in the under-23s. You know, Tyler Onyango got fast track last season. He was playing. There was lads in and around the squad like Reece Hughes. Yeah, and then you've obviously got Ellis Sims up front and Lewis Dobbin have been knocking on the door as well from the under-18. So, you know, obviously there's a few areas that we'll have to get kind of plugged. I can't immediately think of a left-back now that Lewis Gibson has gone to Fleetwood and we'll probably go out on loan again next summer. Will be with the first team, and obviously Matty Fold isn't getting a new deal, so that's one area where either they'll sign a young left back for that position, but I don't really think we're operating in that way anymore of signing players in 23. So there's the opportunity for someone to step up there, and maybe a winger or two as well to come. But certainly think, you know, you've got Sims and Dobbin up front, you've got Reece Hughes, you've got Lewis Warrington. We still don't know what's going to happen with Dennis Adeniran next season. So the bones of a team is there, and an exciting young team at that as well. And I think it'll be really interesting to see these new faces, because for the last 2 years, the team has been pretty much the same, bar one or two changes. So I definitely think it'll be a case of seeing lads step up. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see the under-23s have the same kind of success in terms of trophies and league standing as we've probably gotten used to over the last 4 or 5 years, because whatever people say, you know, Unzi's had a lot of talented players, you know, players like Kenny and Calvert-Lewin and Dal and all lads who've gone out to either play on loan in the Championship or lads who've made it into the first team, like Tom Davis and Luckman spent some time, Calvert-Lewin spent some time. And then even lads who won that last league title, like Anthony Evans and stuff, have been good moves. So, you know, I think it could be a definite transition year, and it could be a tough year in terms of some of the results. But I think that's what I prefer to see, of young lads learning the trade for 6 months or a year, 18 months if they're only 17, 18, and then look to move them out on loan and then look to see if they're good enough for maybe stepping them up to the first team. And then if not, you know, you move them on when they're 19, 20 instead of 23, 24, 25, like we're seeing at the moment.
I think that's definitely you made the right point there. Exactly. I think with the, we should rather see players learn in the trade in this level. I mean, this isn't like we sometimes obviously it's easy to, because we don't win a lot at first team level, so to see our youth teams winning titles and stuff maybe might be a sense of maybe validation, but it's the level where you want to see players, like, you know, cutting their teeth and of course moving on sooner rather than later into that sort of loan system or even into the first team. What I worry about sometimes with our under-23s is that we use it to play too much of our dead wood. The likes of Umar Nias and people like that have been getting game time in the under-23s, and I think that can stifle the amount of game time that our young promising players can get on the pitch in the under-23s.
I think that the problem with that, though, is that people say that to me quite often, and what is also difficult in terms of the club's point of view is most of the time that's happened, where you might see Umar Nias start and then Ellis Sims on the bench, you might see Mohamed Besic start and then Markelo on the bench. A lot of the time these players are asking to play, you know, and going to, you know, Silva or Ancelotti and saying, you know, I need to play some football, I need some match fitness in my legs. And obviously then that message gets filtered down to Unsworth, and that is difficult. I think I can remember remember going to Chorley in the pre-season last season, went down to Chorley, and I think Besic and Pennington had both asked to play just to get minutes. Unsworth said after it, I think there was an occasion this season we played Plymouth in the Premier League Cup at Southport, and, you know, there was a big kickoff when the team sheet got put on Twitter or whatever because Nias was playing and there was no Sims. But, you know, Nias had asked to play, and I think it was around the time of the January transfer window and for Everton. They're probably thinking, you know, does it harm them if Nias plays for the under-23s and scores a couple of goals and, you know, keeps his name kind of out there, and there's always scouts watching and people like that. So it's a very double-edged sword, but I'm always careful to kind of thingy with that when people say, you know, why is this first-team player playing? It is quite often a very simple answer. They are just playing to get minutes in the legs and to get match experience or to keep them in that window where there's scouts and that there. So, but again, you know, with the way we're trying to do things now, you know, you look and see Martinez out of contract and the Nias is out of contract, Garbutt's out of contract. Next season, apart from players coming back from injury, it should be a very rare occasion that you do see first-team lads or first-team outcasts on loan in the reserves. The only way I could see that happening is with the current situation. Like, if we can't get Bolasie off the books, if we can't get Sandro a loan move, you know, God forbid, they might have to drop down and play a game. But I can't see that happening as much. But, you know, it is always interesting, the amount of plates that, you know, David Unsworth and John Ebel have to spin. You know, you've got lads asking to play, you've got young lads knocking on the door, you've probably got Paul Tate in the under-18 saying, you know, take a look at this lad, or this lad's just scored 5 at the weekend. So there's a lot that goes into under-23s, and it's a very kind of specific level of football, isn't it? And the other thing now is obviously, you know, your average Everton fan, your average fan in all Premier League clubs, you know, probably is on the ball enough through the media and through Twitter and other social media to, they probably know who Ellis Sims is, they probably know a few names, but they don't watch these players week in, week out. And I think sometimes that has a staggered effect on, you know, what people might think is kind of, you speak to some people sometimes and they're like, Ellis Sims should be starting for the first team. But, you know, when you watch him every week, you probably think, you know, the club are obviously trying to develop in the manner that's correct for his development. So I think that's why it's always interesting to kind of follow it.
Certainly. I think the real situation is more of a damning indictment of the transfer policies of the past, that we've got too much of the deadwood, that we need to use them in the under-23s to give them match fitness. I think we've got too many first-team players of sorts on the books. I think we're getting to the point now, like you say, this summer, where we're starting to trim that squad size down, and we've been desperate for that for a couple of years now. I think the squad's been far too bloated, and hopefully, like you say, there'll be a lot less of that once a few of these players run out of contract this summer, and hopefully the year after might be the last of the deadwood, if you like, on the way out.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? And I also think that, you know, there's deadwood at the first team level, and then as we started with, there's players who just needed to move on in the under-23 level as well. So I think it'll be good to see you know, what level they do end up at. Do you know what I mean? For the lads who are leaving this summer, and then, you know, you'd even then look towards next summer, and there's even more first team players who are going to be out of contract and probably get moved on this summer or in January to make a small fee on them. So we are now, I think, getting to what Brands probably wanted when he came in, which for him will be a kind of a blank canvas or a fresh start. And I think we'll probably this time in 12 months, we'll be looking at a team that is, you know, very weighted with Marcel Brands type players and Carlo Ancelotti type players. And then even at under 23 level, you know, players who are being signed to fit a system. I think there was an interview with, what's his name? The under 23, Jamie Hoyland, who was the under 23 scout and is now the lead scout for the first team. You know, and it was quite interesting what he said a few months back or a few weeks back, where he said that the way Everton are currently trying to scout players and sign players is to fit a system that is basically manager proof, that basically fits into Marcel Brands' vision and playing style, no matter who the manager is, which I find quite interesting. So, you know, we're probably going to see a very similar type of player being signed now across the next couple of transfer windows, which is interesting. And then it'll be even more interesting to see how that feeds into the under-23s and whether there's a few more, you know, Jared Branthwaite-style signings coming in who are going to be signed, not for the under-23s, but, you know, to start in the under-23s and then with the view to kind of, you know, move up, because Branthwaite already had Football League experience, whether we'll look to dip into fund markets and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of activity in the two squads for the next 12 to 18 months, I'd say.
So, well, I think there's still a lot of changes that need to be made. So that's, if there is that kind of activity, then that's always a good sign. And of course, Marcel Brands executing what he wants, and with Ancelotti at the club as well, I think there's clear, there's a lot more of a plan going forward now than what we saw certainly prior to Brands' appointment in 2018, when the club was in an absolute state of chaos. So it is good to see that we're moving forward in that respect. You were talking about the type of players Brands was looking at bringing in, Jav. You were quite clued up on what kind of players Brands is looking at. Obviously, there's a certain demographic, but is there a style of play that he's quite familiar with, is there?
I think it probably kind of shows itself, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, you look at the forward players that we've signed so far. You look at Richarlison, Alex Iwobi, Bernard, Moise Keane were all signed by Brands. You know, they're all kind of lads who can play across that front line almost. You know, Iwobi can play off both wings in the number 10. Bernard's the same. Richarlison, that kind of striker who can, you know, play across a front three. Moise Keane, another one who you would say can play across the front three if needs be. You know, and then I think this week, you know, there's an interest in the lad from Red Bull Salzburg as well, who's a very similar mould to that as well. So I think in terms of his forward options, yeah, you can definitely see what he's looking for there. I think a more interchangeable attack, and maybe then, you know, because we've got Calvert-Lewin, who's more of your traditional striker, your centre forward who scores goals and a bit of a target man. So, you know, you're probably looking for people to play in and around him. You know, I think even last summer, you look and it very much seemed like we signed players to fit a 4-3-3 as well, didn't it? You know, we lost Gay, kind of tried to directly replace him with Jabamin, although that kind of went down through his injury, which was disappointing. But, you know, he's still there and you can't forget that. But it felt like it was meant to be Delph, Gomez and Jabamin in a kind of fluid midfield three. And then when you look in terms of a defender, you know, and Gabriel has been linked, it does just seem like we're trying to fit that kind of mould now to have a big, dominant, confident centre-half who's quite physical and quite aggressive, because I think we've been missing that a little bit. I do like Mina. I think Mina's got something about him, but, you know, we definitely need someone, I think. You know, it's horrible to say, but even you look at Liverpool and how much has changed for them since signing Virgil van Dijk. And I know not many teams can just go out and throw 75 million on a defender, but, you know, if we can get that kind of, if you can get that right at the back and get that one man to just, you know, can change a lot of things. So, yeah, I think Brands' kind of strategy has probably been hinted at from the last couple of transfer windows, and it'll probably be something similar again over the next 18 months. Obviously, this summer it's going to be quite uncertain. It looks like it's going to be more weighted towards loan moves and swap deals and things like that. So it will be interesting to see how he kind of gets the best out of this transfer window.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a challenge. Finally, before we finish this segment, both of you, I want to see what you think about this. We seem to be seeing fewer and fewer youngsters breaking into the first team. And given that we pride ourselves on bringing through academy players, what do you think we can expect with these sort of this sort of rejig? Do you think we can start seeing more young lads from our academies breaking into the first team in the next few years?
Well, I would think so. Just, Marcel Brand has even said himself, hasn't he, that ideally he wants a 22-23-man squad and then room for young players to come through. Obviously, at the minute, the pathway is, you know, somewhat blocked by, you know, we've got young players cropping up, but the standout ones tend to be in positions where we're quite well stocked. So, you know, Anthony Gordon, for example, he's competing, you know, for one of those. Well, he'd probably prefer like a number 10 position, but we don't play it anymore. And then there's the left hand side, we've got Bernard and Iwobi, who, you know, two very established first teamers. You know, we don't seem to at the minute have the kids coming through in the weaker positions. You know, how good would it be if we had Anthony Gordon, but he was a right winger, that kind of thing. I think we'll see more and more of it. It's just we're in the process at the minute of you know, just
laying the foundations, really.
Yeah, you know, like just tidying the garden. You know, there's some overgrowth in certain areas which needs to be cleared away before things can come through. But I would hope so. It's, you know, it's something the club has prided itself on. And it's got to be said as well, it's slowed down the last couple of years because managers have been playing it safe because they've not been entirely confident in their position in the job because they've not been performing well enough. Carlo Ancelotti will probably have a lot more, you know, peace of mind. He'll be a lot more relaxed about it. He knows he'll get the benefit of the doubt with a dip in form, unlike other. Yeah, or other unproven managers who haven't had that luxury or didn't feel they had that luxury to try a young player. I think that, you know, Carlo Ancelotti will feel that confidence because he knows he won't, you know, lose the confidence of the club and the fans as easily as, say, Marco Silva would have, just based on his record.
That's a very good point as well. I think if anyone's going to be able to handle the situation, it'd be Carlo Ancelotti.
Mm. So, I hope so. I hope we see, you know, more kids, you know, Anthony Gordon looks good. There's other young players come through training with the first team. I can never say his name right. Adeniran. I think that is right. He's training with the first team. A couple of others as well. Obviously, there's clearly been a discussion with Lewis Gibson with his, you know, pathway into the first team laid out. So it could be something we see a lot more of after a few, you know, a couple of years where it's been on and off. But who knows? For all we know, there could be a surprise coming up in this coming season. We could start seasoning another academy graduate. John Joe Kenny's our right back, a little bit older now. Or there could be a breakout star who, you know,
we've never heard of, but
we're all sleeping on. Like, nobody expects Ellis Sims, for example. I'm just using him as a good example of to break into the first team next year. They see them having potential go down the line, but he used to say something like that couldn't happen. You know, injuries happen. You know, what have you, and then you know, as soon as a young player gets the opportunity, you just got to grasp it.
Well, that's it. I think if you remember rightly, I think going into this season, we've all pretty much written Holgate's Everton career off, and he's been one of the players of the season. So, you know, you can never say never about any players, even the ones who are getting on for 21, 22.
Calvert-Lewin as well. Holgate and Calvert-Lewin, two of our standout players this year, and start of the year, there'd have been a lot of Evertonians who told you the two of them weren't good enough. Just, you never know. You could same thing could happen with John Joe Kenny. Same thing could happen with Tom Davies. We could end up with both of them being established first teamers next year because it's just as likely or as unlikely as it would have been with Holgate this year.
Well, I think that's the hope for all of us. I think I want to see more players from our academies go on to be successful here, which is, I think that's the dream of any Everton fans, certainly a Scousers, to see Scousers coming through and doing well. We haven't seen much of that lately. So, you know, that could be a real positive, especially if Brands can get this sort of rejigging like full steam ahead. If we can get that to work in the next couple of years and, the foundations have been laid, then let's see if we can reap the rewards of that. Right, for you podcast listeners, it's time for the middle bit where we give ourselves a much-needed break from the trials and tribulations of supporting Everton and harp on about something else for a bit. And on today's show, we're going to discuss our favourite comedy films. So we'll start with Sam. We'll go to you. What's your go-to comedy film, Sam?
What a question. Say, it's been a few over the years, I think, that I've been proper in. I thought the first time I ever went to watch Borat on the pictures, that was funny. Can't go wrong with a bit of Step Brothers, can you? A bit of Will Ferrell. That's decent. Big Simpsons fan, so I'll always throw the Simpsons movie in there as well.
Classic.
Go for that. I think go-to though. I think at the moment, like if it was just sitting off on Netflix, probably a bit of Superbad. You can't beat Superbad. Yeah. It's absolutely hilarious. They're my four.
That's a good shout. They're all good shouts to them. I think my number one would probably be Step Brothers. So I think you've reeled off mine there as well. That's a belted of a shout.
Tropic Thunder as well. That's absolute quality film. Anything with Will Ferrell, Ben Stiller, anything like that, I'm always game for giving that a watch.
Class. What about you, Terry?
I prefer more of the classic ones. I love Airplane. I love the Naked Gun films. Mm. Anything like that. Anything that's sort of dry like that, where it's presented as if it's serious, or not the film, but just the performance by Leslie Nielsen, anything where it's deadpan.
Yeah.
I can watch those films anytime and act like I've never seen them before and just be in bulk. Absolutely brilliant.
You know what, mate? I completely forgot about Airplane, and I'm going to go and watch it after we finish this because it's an absolute belter of a film, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Anything that Leslie Nielsen touched in his comedy career is just fantastic. You know, Airplane, Naked Gun films, Police Squad, anything like that. Oh, they're absolutely brilliant. They'll never, ever be beaten for me. Outside of that, I'm just having a little think. Quite like the Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright films, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, what have you. Because I've been a fan of Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, and who have you, since they made Spaced, which is a TV show from 1999 and 2001. It was on at only two seasons. Fantastic series, and Shaun of the Dead was sort of like his little... It was only a small, small budget film at the time. I don't think he realised it was going to be as big as it was, and it just sort of launched his film career. I've not long rewatched Hot Fuzz, and it's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. But yeah, they're probably my submissions to the topic.
Hot Fuzz is a good shout, to be fair, like with Hot Fuzz. Shaun of the Dead as well, but I thought the last one, The World's End, wasn't as good, but I suppose it's hard to live up to those first two films, innit?
Yeah,
I think Paul's a good one.
Yeah, Paul is good.
Yeah, I enjoyed Paul, but it's not made by Edgar Wright. That's not the same as the Three Flavours of Ice Cream trilogy, they call it, of World's End, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. But I get what Sam's saying. World's End's all right, but it's just not as good as the previous two. It sort of peaks at Hot Fuzz, I think.
I'd say Shaun of the Dead's the best out of those three, to be fair.
Shaun of the Dead's a good one to just, like, whack on if you like hungover or something like that, and just sit off that on.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
That'll be me tomorrow after I've had a couple of drinks while watching Airplane, then.
You haven't got a drinking problem, have you?
Not yet, anyway. I mean, give it a few more months of lockdown and I might end up turning myself in.
When you're watching Airplane, Lacey, you'll get that reference, so...
I've already got it.
But you're going to message me when you see it and go, oh, yeah, that's what he meant.
could be worse. It could be amphetamines. okay, then, well, we'll move on to our next segment. The show we're going to do tonight is on Jibril Sidibe first, our only loan signing this season, and that's quite a far cry, really, from the days of Roberto Martinez and Everloan, when we were signing about three or four loan players a season. So we've only made one, and it's Jibril Sidibe, and We'll start with you on this one, Teddy. What have you made of Sidibe's spell on loan from Monaco this season?
It's a hard one to sum up, really, isn't it? Because, well, he's off his head. He's completely off his head as a player. Sometimes he's an absolute monster, and he's just can't be beat. He's, you know, going one on one with a winger and coming out on top every time. And then other times he's disastrous. Like he's the weak link in the team, and the opposition are targeting him. And it's hard to really make your mind up. He is such a hot and cold player. There doesn't seem to be any middle ground with him. I mean, earlier in the season, I was all for, you know, Sidibe, his attacking contribution was just a breath of fresh air. You know, Seamus Coleman, you know, fantastic player, fantastic servant to the club. And I wouldn't even go so far as some others and say, like, oh, you know, he's not 40. He's got, you know, a fair few years left in him. But he's just lost a little bit of cutting edge going forward since he came back from his injury, whether it's pace, whether it's... you know, confidence and taking on the man, but it just he's lost a little something recently with his attack and play. Seamus Coleman still got it defensively, he's still as good as he was, but Sidibe was just a cut above him with his contribution to, you know, assists and what have you. His crossing is a lot better, and there was some, you know, balls he played. There was one, I think it was Huddersfield, where his first assist, and he played a diagonal across to Calvert-Lewin. And it was just...
Against Sheffield Wednesday.
Sorry, who did I say? Huddersfield? Sheffield Wednesday, yeah. Sorry, my mistake. Against Sheffield Wednesday, the type of ball he played, the diagonal crossfield from the right flank, it just struck me like that. Seamus Coleman wouldn't have even attempted that ball or even seen it. And he just added something completely different. And there's been games where he's been fantastic, but then there's been games like...
There was the Norwich game.
Yeah, the Norwich game... where he was absolutely dreadful.
Oh, man, Sidibe, get over.
Yeah, the famous fit clip. That might have been me. I was sitting in the lower bullens that game, so it might not have even been the fella holding the camera. Might have been me from underneath him. And then there's obviously the Chelsea game, the last game we played before, you know, lockdown.
Oh, and
it was one of the worst individual performances of the season. He was absolutely diabolical. So it's hard. He's been so
up and down, isn't it?
Yeah, he's sometimes, you know, we're going to grade him eventually, but he, you know, some games he's been 9 out of 10, some games he's been 2 out of 10. It's hard. I think now, to just preempt your next question, would you buy him? I was unsure before the, you know, coronavirus, you know, impact on football, which, you know, Dieco have come out and said this week that it has changed transfer plans. You know, what was planned has now been sort of modified to accommodate the losses that'll incur. And that's made my mind up. I think we should save our money and look for either a better option, stick with Kenny maybe. I'm not 100% sure Kenny's the right answer there, but if we're prioritising positions, I think, you know, centre-back, centre-midfield, maybe even right midfield are more pressing when we've got two senior right backs already in place, and it may be something we look at next summer. But I wouldn't buy Sidibe with the market being as it is now, with, you know, money needing to go a lot further, even though it is a low fee by the previous standards.
Certainly, I think the big question is, before I move on to Sam, if you have to vouch for bringing in Sidibe and selling Kenny, or letting Sidibe go and keeping Kenny or Sidibe?
Straight, you know, we get money for Kenny if we sell him, and but you can only buy Sidibe type scenario.
Basically, yeah. So we pay the money for Sidibe and then make a profit on Kenny.
Yeah, I'd do that. I think he is a better player than Kenny, but I don't think it'll be that neat and tidy. I don't think we'll get a buyer for Kenny. Given that Schalke can't afford it and what have you. If that was that binary option, keep one or the other, but the other one goes out, which, it depending on who you pick, then I do prefer Sidibe to Kenny. But as I say, I don't think it'll be as neat and tidy and as black and white as that. I think it'll be a lot more complicated, and I don't think we should be buying Sidibe if other options are available, which obviously in that scenario they wouldn't be.
So Can you see John Joe Kenny playing for Everton next season?
Before Sidibe, I do. I think there is still a possibility that we could get a different right back. But yes, I think if you said to me now who's got more chance of playing next season for Everton, Sidibe or Kenny, it's going to be one or the other. I'd probably say Kenny, given the financial situation.
So it's more of a circumstance thing that's brought Kenny back.
Yeah, it's a circumstance. There's a lot of, you know, intangibles going with that. Who do I prefer out the two? Sidibe. Who do I think's more likely? Kenny, just because of the situation. But it's not to say I don't like Kenny. I don't think he's a massive step down from Sidibe. I just think Sidibe is a better player, but it's, you know, it's a matter of money now.
Well, let's not also forget that John Joe Kenny is younger and could still kick on a bit. So
yeah, I mean, I said in the previous segment that there's every chance John Joe Kenny comes back and does a Calvert-Lewin. You know, he's been around for a while, but he, you know, change of system, change of manager, just clicks with him, and he, you know, grows as a player. That would be the perfect scenario. I mean, I don't think anyone would be against that happening. I think that'd be everyone's first choice, but it's just whether it's realistic or whether you envision it. But we'll see. I think it's more likely we'll see Kenny than Sidibe, though.
Certainly, yeah. Sam, what about you? Would you want to shed some light on the Gabriel Sidibe conundrum? Do you think that there's a standout sort of performance? You venture more to the positive side or the negative side of Gabriel Sidibe's game?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I remember his debut at Lincoln, and we were there, and remember after it thinking, it was weird, like, for someone who's been in a World Cup squad, you know, he didn't look that great there. They did win me over for a couple of weeks then. I think got a few good assists and looked comfortable going forward, but I think Terry kind of summed it up quite nicely. He has just been a little bit too inconsistent. I think his positioning has left a lot to be required at times. You know, I think one against one, he's not really too bad, but it does seem like he just switches off positionally. I think we've seen it against Arsenal when Aubameyang got in behind him. I think the Brighton goal when Dean scored the own goal, you know, what, towards Christmas was probably him kind of venturing upfield when it was 2-2 in the last minute. So I think if we have to make a decision, if we're having to look at this summer as a kind of unique summer where we have to go after the priorities, I think I'd rather just say, look, well, we definitely need a centre-back. We definitely need a centre-mid. Let's just get Kenny back. You know, Kenny's value will still be there next summer, I'd like to think. So I think I'd definitely go for Kenny over Sidibe at this point.
Yeah, I think that would be the take I'd have on it as well, to be honest. I think I'm not sure whether it's not necessarily... I'm relatively impressed with what I've seen from Kenny playing for Schalke. I know they've not played well recently, Schalke, but he has had a decent season over there, and I'd like to see what he could do coming back to Goodison next season. And more than anything, I'm not confident enough in Gabriel Sidibe as a right back to maintain a place in an Everton side that's obviously trying to aim higher than it's already at.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the thing is that, yeah, we probably can't. I think this summer now, you know, even if this wasn't going on, I still wouldn't probably say, you know, pay the money for Sidibe. I just don't think he's shown enough. And yeah, I do think that somewhere down the line, something better will come up. So, you know, he's been decent for us. Sidibe, I'd never put him down as a flop. I'd never put him down as, you know, one of the worst players to play for Everton or anything like that. You know, he's obviously got pedigree. He's played in the World Cup. Yeah, he's got a World Cup winners medal. He's, you know, done well in France as well. I think won League One there as well. So, you know, he's a decent player. But I think it just comes to the toss-up, doesn't it? I'd rather see John Joe Kenny after a year in Germany be given that chance to say, look, in his full season, you know, you're going to get good game time as long as you're playing well. Go and show us what you've got. And then at the end of that season, he hasn't impressed enough. Then you move him on, kind of thing. I think that would probably be the move to make sense at this point.
I think I'd have to agree with you on that. So obviously, we'll draw this sort of Sidibe debate to a close. We'll go for our scores out of 10. What would you give Sidibe out of 10 this season, Sam?
I'm going to go for a 6. I'm going to sit on the fence on Jib. Go 6.
6 out of 10. Teddy?
Yeah, I'm probably going to go for 6 out of 10 as well. It's been too good to be lower than that, but he can't go any higher because he's had too many stinkers. But he's been more good than bad, but when he's been bad, so I go for six.
Yeah, it's one of them. Maybe it's just the trauma of the Chelsea game still ringing in me a little bit. Yeah. I was going to give him a 5.5. So it's near enough a unanimous decision, but I just think a 6 is a bit too high for someone who's played as dreadfully as he has on some occasions. So let's say a 5.5. But if, whatever way you look at it, there you have it, guys. The verdict on Jibril Sidibe is exactly what you were probably expecting. An absolute mixed bag of any middle-of-the-road set of scores. And on that showing, probably not sufficient to convince Everton to trigger his buyout clause at the end of the season in the midst of the obvious financial uncertainty, the sort of black hole that we're going into. But we'll wait and see what happens on that front in the next transfer window, whenever that may be. Teddy, Sam and I are going to bring you another player performance review for this season's first team squad. And our next review will be on Everton's number 9, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Only 23 years old, it's hard to believe he's already been part of the Everton first team for 4 years. We've been waiting for him to kick on and improve as a goal scorer for a while, and this season it looks as though he's finally stepped up. 13 goals at the close of play before lockdown, and 9 games left if the season resumes to try and better that tally. So, comfortably the best goal scoring of his young career. So, we'll start with you on this one, Sam. We've got to be pleased with Calvert-Lewin's progress this season, surely.
Yeah, it's a mad one, isn't it? There's not many players like Calvert-Lewin who've kind of bounced back from the opinion I think a lot of people had formed of him, especially this season. You know, I remember as far back as, like, it's mad to think how long he's been in the team for, really. I remember when we had those Europa League qualifiers under Koeman in that kind of last kind of fateful summer, and I remember he scored and won the games. It was a really nice finish, but it might have been at Rosenborg, and I just couldn't believe it. Like, he just didn't seem like a natural goal scorer. But then sometimes, like, I think it was Sunderland in the Carabao Cup not long after that, then he'd score a really nice finish, and I just didn't know what to make of him. But halfway through this season, for me, at the time Silva was sacked, I was done with him, really. I just thought, you know, he'd missed chances. I think there was that Villa one at the start of the season. He wasn't scoring goals. You know, he had all the hard work, but you just thought, I just got to the point where I was like, you know, if you're going to be Everton's number 9, you've still got to score goals. It can't just be the hard work. And it kind of felt like a lot of other people had reached that conclusion, but what a kind of rebirth at such a young age as well. It just looks a totally different player, looks to have all the confidence in the world. You're getting to the point now where you're expecting them to score. And to be honest, if we were in any other climate and the season would have carried on the way it was, he probably would have scored 15, 20 goals, and we might have had your Manchester United and a few other teams knocking at the door for him, because that's how good he was playing, and generally been, I think, head and shoulders above the rest, probably definitely our player of the season, maybe alongside Richarlison. So, you know, and such a good partnership he's formed with him as well. So, just so good at the moment. And I just really hope that at the end of this season and even next season, then he can pick up where he'd left off, because he does look to be thriving on that confidence. You know, I think he thoroughly deserves an England call-up as well. You know, I think Dominic Solanke's played for England and he hasn't. Bit of an insult. And he is just on red-hot form. And, you know, he's just got it all, hasn't he? He's fast, he's strong, he's physical, he's not scared of defenders. You know, he loves winding people up, which is always good to see. And then he knows where the back of the net is. So Everton have stumbled across a gem, I think, in Calvert-Lewin. And, you know, he could save Marcel Brands 20, 30, 40, 50 million in the future, because he really is looking that good a prospect. And, you know, in an age where teams every summer are scrambling around to try and find the next goal scorer, Everton could have had one in the ranks all along, and testament to your David Underwoods, your Duncan Fergusons, your coaches who worked with them every week over the last 3 or 4 years, and then also, and then, you know, you've got to probably credit, you know, Koeman and Silva and now Ancelotti as well for for each working with him, but certainly looks like he's thriving off the management style of Ancelotti and being given that kind of responsibility up front with Richarlison.
I think there's no doubt about it, though. With Carlo Ancelotti, you're talking about a style of a manager who's levels above the previous managers we've had. And what do you think that kind of... He surely has a much more telling impact on players when you bring in a manager of that calibre.
I think he said, didn't he, this week even? He said that, you know, it was great in that, but he said one of the biggest things that Ancelotti did was he just didn't say too much. You know, Ancelotti, you know, is an experienced manager, and he's obviously worked with more high-profile characters than Calvert-Lewin in his time, but I think he'd learned that thing of, you know, he just didn't say too much, just didn't give him too much to take on board. He scored those two goals against Chelsea, and I think Ancelotti just told him to carry on doing what he was doing, and that's what he's done. And I think definitely there must be that sense of puffing out your shoulders and thinking, look, if I'm good enough to start up front for Carlo Ancelotti, then I'm good enough to play in this Everton team, to wear the number 9, to play in the Premier League. So, you know, no doubt that Carlo's having an effect, and it really does seem like his man management skills have been spot on with Dominic as well.
I think there was a point where I think he told the press, didn't he, that Carlo asked them to stay more central. And obviously I think that's really reaped his rewards.
Yeah, and I think then, you know, to find that part, it was the Chelsea game, wasn't it, when Calvert-Lewin scored twice and him and Richarlison were that dynamic duo that I think a lot of people thought, you know, bloody hell, why haven't we been doing this for ages? You know, when he is more central and, you know, he causes the problems, and you can't discount Richarlison's impact, because I think, you know, Calvert-Lewin, when he was playing by himself, he was winning the headers or he was giving defenders problems, but there was no one around him. And I think since we entered that 4-4-2, he's just been able to use his strengths not only to get himself goals, but for the team as well, and to bring other people into the game. So, you know, making him that focal point of the attack alongside Richarlison has been a masterstroke from Duncan, and even better than from Carlo to stick with it.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing, is obviously you brought in a manager who's... I think he's always been an adaptable manager, Ancelotti, with the different styles of play that he's used at different clubs. But the fact that he's come into the team, obviously with the caretaker manager who just changed it to 4-4-2 and stuck with it, I've been quite impressed with that from Ancelotti. You know, it's quite easy for managers to come in with egos and these big ideas for philosophies and whatnot, but he's come in and he's been very adaptable, a lot more pragmatic than a lot of previous managers have been, and he doesn't seem as stubborn, which is, I think that really helps with that kind of flexibility, helps players, I think, and especially when they're going through dry spells. Obviously it's been a whole new level of goal scoring from Calvert-Lewin since Ancelotti's arrival.
Yeah, and it is just, it's set the foundation, hasn't it? I really think now, I know it felt like we've said this every year for about 10 years now, but it's exciting now next season that, you know, we do seemingly, certainly offensively, have a bit of a shape that works. We've got two players who are scoring goals, and I know we still need to finish this first season, and anything could still happen, and we could lose all our last few games, and we'll be kind of looking at it from the other side. But at this point in time, I'm generally thinking, you know, Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison, you know, they don't half suit each other. They don't half suit that system that Ancelotti seemingly likes. And, you know, that's got to give you high spirits. You know, if we can plug a few gaps in this current market and moving forward, then, you know, we've got a forward. I don't reckon any centre-back or defender in the Prem would be happy waking up on a Saturday morning saying, I've got to defend against Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, because they've got bags of energy. They're strong, they're aggressive, they're fast. You know, Calvert-Lewin wins a lot of headers, got a leap that, you know, it's almost like Cristiano Ronaldo, like the way he jumps, isn't it? The way he hangs in the air. I've never seen that from an Everton player before. So, yeah, it does seem like Carlo stumbled on something, stuck with it, and it could pay dividends for us, hopefully, next season.
Certainly. What about you, Terry? What do you think Calvert-Lewin's brought to his game this season that maybe he didn't have before?
He's just found where he fits, doesn't he? I mean, he's been in the team for a long time, but he was sort of mistreated, wasn't he, by various managers. Like, you know, he came in under Koeman, and Koeman was playing him wide, you know, a lot. And, you know,
wing-back.
Yeah, wing-back in one game. The fact that he was so... His physical attributes sort of betrayed him a little bit, because he was, you know, he was fast, he was strong, he, you know, he was had all the, you know, the tools physically, as Sam touched on, and he was such a hard worker and so, you know, willing to, you know, put the graft in. You know, Koeman used him as a utility player. Then obviously after that we didn't get the replacement for Lukaku, and he was thrown into the under the glare of the spotlight as the number nine in the team, and he wasn't ready for it yet, and he certainly didn't suit being up front by himself. So it coloured the, you know, the opinion a lot of supporters had of him, including myself. I didn't, you know, I certainly didn't see him as a number nine in that respect. I thought for a long time, well, this was my take on Calvert-Lewin up until recently, was that he was the second striker. He was the type of player like a Stephen Naismith. He needed to be on the pitch with another striker who was the main top striker. So if he'd have been on the pitch with Lukaku more like in later in Calvert-Lewin's career, not when he was a kid, if he'd have played in a system where he was just off Lukaku in like a 4-2-3-1 or whatever, I didn't think he'd suddenly start turning on the goals, but I thought you'll see a lot more and appreciate his ability a lot more in that position, that sort of Stephen Naismith, make space for other players type position. I didn't think for a second in a 4-4-2, you know, how we need to see Calvert-Lewin in a 4-4-2, because I genuinely thought at Everton at least that formation was extinct. We hadn't seen it since pre-David Moyes era. But obviously, as you said before, you know, Duncan Ferguson went to an orthodox 4-4-2, and Ancelotti took that on, and to everyone's surprise, myself included, like, you know, he hasn't become this Stephen Naismith sort of, you know, assistant to the main striker. He's become the main striker. He is the main striker. And it's just added a different dimension to his game. He looks more like a number nine now in a 4-4-2. And with him and Richarlison as a partnership, we've got something there. And I'm thankfully both signed up to new long-term contracts which reflect their position at the club, which is probably the two strongest pillars in the squad of, you know, to build upon. They're going to be the two names on the team sheet whenever they fit going forward, because they complement each other so well. Calvert-Lewin is a perfect foil for the type of striker Richarlison is, and Richarlison's the perfect foil for the type of striker Calvert-Lewin is. So Calvert-Lewin, under this manager, under Ferguson, and in a 4-4-2 formation, has become the player he was, you know, he wanted to be, and he was, you know, meant to be. To the surprise of, you know, everyone, no, I don't think anyone saw a great goal scorer in him until, you know, he started banging the goals in. It was not something that, you know, you would have said his main attribute was, that, you know, he can find the net. It was always his hard work, and that worked against him, as I say. He said, didn't he, that Ancelotti said to stay central and make himself a presence. And it was music to his ears, because every other manager had told him to run the channels and what have you. And he'd had some brilliant games playing like that. You know, away at Man City gets mentioned a lot in the season where, you know, Koeman and Walsh and all those players, he terrorised the Man City back four by himself. You know, got Kyle Walker sent off. I genuinely thought that was what he was going to be. He was going to be that nuisance type player. I didn't see him as a box number nine striker, but that seems to be what he excels at. And yeah, I think he's been, from December onwards, he's been a revelation. And if it hadn't been for, you know, COVID-19, he would have been in the next England squad, and deservedly so. And I hope that he still gets the call up whenever the next England squad is.
Most certainly. And I think what it's worth, we were talking about the kids earlier on, weren't we? And I think another good thing of the switch to 4-4-2 is that we'll get to see, I think that's the formation the under-23s use as well. So there's a bit more synchronicity there, isn't there?
Well, if it... if it isn't already the formation the under-23s use, I'm sure Sam will let us know, but it's probably going to be it going forward, because that seems to be the way the club is going to set up going forwards, play 4-4-2. And if you can't, you know, obviously a lot of players won't suit that, but, you know, we're reaping the benefits of sort of other players who do suit it, like Calvert-Lewin himself. So if you don't suit it, I think you need to be speaking to your agents about going somewhere else, because it's not a position you can hide in. You can't blag. You can't blag it in a 4-4-2, because every single position needs to stand up and be accounted for, and the strikers, Calvert-Lewin especially, do that.
Well, that's the thing. The formation's brought a lot out of him, but obviously you've still got to finish the chances. And do you think that's just a confidence thing that's come maybe with the assurance that Ancelotti's brought?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things. I think it's he's finding himself having more space, so he and you know, he's under different instructions now, so he's getting more opportunities, he's getting better opportunities. And yeah, I think confidence is a big thing as well. Once you know, a lot of players have hit like purple patches and what have you. And, you know, earlier in the season, he had that miss against Aston Villa, which got, you know, screenshotted before he hit it, and people were like giving him pelters for it because it, you know, he's missed what seemed in a freeze frame to be an easy chance. But you know, he had the knack of scoring before the postponement of the league. Even goals where didn't look like he was entirely in control of himself, like away at Newcastle, where he somehow, you know, bundled it in. And you know, against Chelsea, it was a scruffy goal. It's like, but that's what strikers do. It's what number nines are meant to do. Like, they don't all have to be Puskas, you know, nominated goals. Some of them need to be scruffy tap-ins. Some of them need to be lucky, like the Man United one, where he just chases down the ball and keeper does him a favour. They all count, and that the more of them, the better, because his confidence will grow and grow, and he'll take more chances like that, and he'll get more rewards.
Well, fingers crossed, that's what the future holds. We're going to finish with our obviously verdict out of 10. What about you, Terry? What would you go with for Dom out of 10 this season? Calvert-Lewin, of course, not Cummings.
8 out of 10. He only loses the two because earlier in the season, which I'm not going to even say he was terrible in, but to get any higher than an 8, you'd have to do it all season. But from December till the postponement, he was fantastic, so I'm going to give him an 8.
Sam?
I think it's pretty harsh from Terry. I've got to go a 9 for DCL, Defo. The goals he scored, and you've got to remember we're still, I know it seems mad, but we're only partly through the season, aren't we? He could still end up with 15, 20 goals, which, you know, you'd almost certainly say 15. A good end to the season would see 20 goals. An Everton striker scoring 20 goals in the Premier League season at that age would be something else. So, yeah, I think 9 out of 10 could push on. Could push on towards the perfect 10 if he scores over 20 goals for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it takes for an Everton striker to get a 10 out of 10. You've got to be in the 20s for scoring goals, and you never know, it might happen. For me, I'm going to stick with the 9 as well. I think that's the right shout. I mean, for me, the reason that he gets a bit higher than what maybe Terry gave him is that, obviously, yeah, he didn't do well, but we're talking about the extent of his improvement from where we were at the start of the season to where he was when the lockdown was announced. I think the progress he's made is, that's a testament to his work rate and obviously the manager as well. But I think the progress that he's made and how hard he's worked to come so far this season, I think he deserves a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, fair enough.
So there you go, guys. 2 9s and an 8 for Dominic Calvert-Lewin this season, so far anyway. And that brings us to the end of the performance review. But of course, if you're listening to the podcast, it's time for us to round off with the If You Know Your History quiz. Tonight, it's Terry up against Sam in another Matchday squad quiz. Of course, that means we go through the members of the squad, be it a starter or a substitute who was used in that game. And of course, the first to get one wrong surrenders and hands his opponent the big W. So first things first, we're going to decide who goes first. I've got my trusty coin with me again, and I'll let the returning Sam pick heads or tails. So heads or tails, mate?
I'll go heads.
Let's have a look. It's tails.
Ugh.
Go on, Teddy. First or second?
I'll go first, please.
Yeah, you went second last week and that didn't work out for you. I know you won last week, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it wasn't because I went second, but I like to mix it up.
There you go. We'll mix it up then. So Teddy's going to go first, and now that's all sorted, I'll cue the intense quiz music. There it is. We'll reveal the fixture in question. Our fixture tonight is Wigan Athletic 0, Everton 1, Premier League, 30th of January 2010. And there was only 2 new substitutes in this game, so we've got a nice odd number. We've got to have a winner first time round. 13 correct answers to choose from. Terry, let's do it.
I'm going to go with Tim Howard.
Always a safe bet. Tim Howard started the game, and if in case you were wondering, played the whole game. Sam?
struggling to even remember this game, so it's going to be a tough one. I'll go for Tim Cahill.
Tim Cahill played and, of course, scored the only goal, the winning goal, 6 minutes from time.
Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines did indeed play and took the corner that Cahill scored from.
Marouane Fellaini.
Marouane Fellaini plays the full game. Don't doubt yourself, Sam. You're doing all right here.
Phil Neville.
Phil Neville played the full game.
Great shot.
That's 5 out of 13. 5 out of the 11 starting players.
Sylvain Distan.
Teddy's our winner again. Sylvain Distan did not play at all.
No Sylvain? Where was Big Sylv?
No idea, but it was all, we were all the worse for it because Philippe Senderos was the other centre-back.
Oh, my God. Did Jags play?
No, but yeah, let's cross Senderos off. I'll let you have a guess of all the others. You've still got 5 more starters and 2 subs to go.
Darren Gibson?
Darren Gibson, I don't think he'd signed for Everton by this point.
Hadn't he?
That was the year after, wasn't he?
Osman?
Who did you say, Osman?
Yeah.
Yeah, he played the full game.
Oh, he's the safest bet in the whole team. I don't know why I didn't go for him. John Heitinger?
Yeah, Heitinger was Senderos's centre-back partner. So you've got the whole of the back 4 and the keeper. You've got Fellaini and Osman, Tim Cahill, 3 more starters and 2 subs.
Louis Saha
started the game and was substituted later on.
Pina
played the full game. 1 more starter and then your 2 subs.
Big Vic
was one of the substitutes. He came on the 75th minute.
May have not signed yet, I can't remember. But Kevin Morales?
No, Morales, he didn't sign for another 2 years.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh. I'm trying to go by position.
Yeah, I'll tell you where they played. The starter you're missing played on the right wing, and the sub was a striker.
Was Coleman playing on the right back then?
No, Coleman was an unused sub.
Donovan? Landon Donovan?
It was Landon Donovan who started on the right wing. That was a great shout. And the final substitute, this is a bit of an interesting one.
Belios?
Nope.
Vaughan?
James Vaughan came on in the last minute for Louis Saha. And
last game, surely?
It might have been his last game, I'm not actually sure. But Big Vic came on for Landon Donovan, 75th minute. Vaughan on for Saha in the 90th minute. The unused substitutes were Carlo Nash, Shane Duffy, Seamus Coleman, Jack Rodwell and Dinyar Bilyaletdinov. So there you have it. Terry's our winner once again. It seems to be a weekly ritual now, Terry, but if you want to go and reel through his ER, he's already on it now. He's looking through his music playlist. He's trying to pick us a song to see us out at the end of this podcast.
Ooh, I'm going to go for Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang.
Wow. You're really mixing it up lately, aren't you?
I've had to come away from the classic rock songs because I've had a couple of repeats because I've done that many that I forgot which ones I've done and which ones I hadn't.
Yeah, I've lost count of the number of Red Hot Chili Peppers we've had off you, to be honest. So the Sugar Hill Gang is quite a deviation.
Sorry, James, I've never picked the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think you're thinking of someone else.
Really?
Yeah. Not that I dislike them, I've just never picked them. I've not really been that into them.
Because I've sworn you.
No, I think it's Max. Max does the Chili Peppers. Yeah, Max does the Chili Peppers. He does the Chili Peppers and Oasis a fair bit, especially the Chili Peppers.
I know, I forgot. It's usually Max who always seems to win when you play against him,
isn't he? Yeah, Max. They got beat Max like once ever.
Max is pretty imperious on these, and Thomas, I think, is. Terry's enjoying getting used to the winning feeling, it seems, and he's clearly.
It'll soon be over, don't worry.
And he's going to serenade us at the end of this with the Sugar Hill Gang Rapper's Delight. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the song and why you've gone with it?
The best song ever made, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise. One of the funniest things that I've ever heard was I was in one of my old places of work in the stockroom, and there was a little, you know, Bluetooth speaker going and someone's phone playing music, and Rapper's Delight came on, and it'd been like in a mix of a lot of other like rap songs and that from the lads in the stockroom, and one of the lads shouts from the other side of the stockroom when this comes out, he went, "Fucking hell, lads, who's this, John Barnes?" And then, like, I think about 3 years later, on a League of Their Own, John Barnes did actually come out and rap this song. I couldn't believe it, but it's tickled me ever since this day. But yeah, brilliant song. But John's gonna have to like play it a lot earlier than just the usual songs because it's so long. So it'll probably come on in the middle of the quiz. It's that long.
It's one of them. I mean, either that, or we can get John Barnes on to rap it for us at the end.
Yeah. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Like an interview with John Barnes for the Toffee Blues, and you know, just
get him to see the world in motion rap at the end.
Yeah.
But there you have it, guys. That's the end of our podcast. If you want to give us a subscribe and a like, the usual whatnot, get down and do all that. And yeah, thank you to Sam for coming on again.
No, thanks for having me.
More than welcome, mate, and of course you'll see me and Teddy again next week probably, so be sure to check that out. But we'll leave you for now with Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang as per Teddy's request. See you later. You rock it to the beat without a care, cruise the short shot MCs for the affair. Now I'm not as tall as the rest of the gang, but I rap to the beat just the same. I got a little face and a pair of rhyme eyes. All I'm here to do, ladies, is hypnotize. I sing it on and on and on and on and on. The beat don't stop until the break of dawn. I sing it on and on and on and on and on. Like a hot butter, the pop, the pop, the pop, give it, give it, pop, the pop, pop. You don't dare stop or come alive, y'all. Give me what you got. I guess by now you can take a hunch and find that I am the baby of the bunch. But that's okay, I still keep in stride, cause all I'm here to do is just a wiggle your behind. Sing it on and on and on and on. The beat don't stop until the break of dawn. I sing it on and on and on and on and on. Rock, rock, yo, I throw it on the floor. I'm gonna freak you here, I'm gonna freak you there. I'm gonna move you out of this atmosphere, cause I'm one of a kind and I'll shock your mind. I put the jig, jig, jiggles in your behind. I say the 1, 2, 3, 4, come on, girls, I get it on the floor. I come alive, yo, give me what you got, cause I'm guaranteed to make you rock. I said 1, 2, 3, 4, tell me, Wonder Mike, what are you waiting for? To the hip, hop, the hit me to the hip, me the hip, hip, a hopper, you don't stop, rock it to the bang, bang, the boogie, say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie beat. Well, skittle a bebop, we rock a Scooby-Doo, and guess what, America, we love you, well, cause we rock in a row with us so much so, you can rock till you're 101 years old. I don't mean to brag, I don't mean to boast, but we're like hot butter on a breakfast toast. Rock it up, a baby bubba, baby bubba to the boogie, bang, bang, the boogie to the beat, beat is so unique, come on, everybody, and dance to the beat. To the boogity bang bang, the boogie to the boogity beat. I say I can't wait to the end of the week when I rap it to the rhythm of a groovy beat and attempt to raise your body heat. I just blow your mind so well that you can't speak or do a thing, but I rock and shuffle your feet and let it change up to a dance called the freak. And when you finally do come into your rhythmic beat, rest a little while so you don't get weak. I know a man in Hank, he has more rhymes than a serious bank, so come on, hey, I sing that song until the rhythm of the boogity bang bang the ball. The dimp, the ladies pimp, the women fight for my delight, but I'm the grand master with the 3 MC.
MCs that shop the house for the young ladies. And when you come inside into the front, you do the freak bank or do the bump. And when the sucker MCs try to prove a point with Treacherous Trio or with the Serious Joiner, from sun to sun and from day to day, I sit down and write a brand new rhyme, because they say that miracles never cease. I've created a devastating masterpiece. I'm gonna rock the mic so you can't resist. Everybody, I say it goes like this. While I was coming home late one dark afternoon, reporter stopped me for an interview. She said she's heard stories and she's heard fables that are vicious on the mic and the turntable. This young reporter I did adore, so I rocked the vicious rhyme like I never did before. She said, damn fly guy, I'm in love with you. Casanova legend must have been true. I said, by the way, baby, what's your name? Said, I go by the name Lois Lane. And you can be my boyfriend, you surely can. Just let me quit my boyfriend called Superman. I said, he's a fairy, I do suppose, flying through the air and pantyhose. He may be very sexy or even cute, but he looks like a sucker in a blue and red suit. I said, you need a man who's got finesse and his whole name across his chest. He may be able to fly all through the night, but can he rock a party till the early light? He can't satisfy you with his little worm, but I can bust you out with my super sperm. I go do it, I go do it, I go do it, do it, do it. And I'm here, and I'm there, I'm Big Bang Hank, I'm everywhere. I just throw your hands up in the air and party harder like it's